This is John Walton, and you're listening to the Power Play Point Podcast with the Blue Liner on point and Anna Knox. Here's Wilson, and on the right side, and he scores!
Hello and welcome once again to the Power Play Point Podcast. This is your host, the Blue Liner on Point, and I am doing a terrific job of masking my utter perturbance, if that's a word. Absolute disgust. Throw in any negative adjective you want, but let's just say for once the weather matches my mood. It's cloudy and a bit drizzly here in Glen Burnie, Maryland. From my podcast chair. And yeah, I could not feel worse about my hockey team, but you know, them's the breaks. That's playoff hockey, which we expected it. So, before we go any further, the mermaid is not with us this week. She is not, up to a show, not feeling a bit under the weather. So, we will be missing her this week, hopefully have her next week, which will most likely be the wrap-up. So in her stead, co-hosting is a familiar voice. And from Myersville, Maryland, of course, it's C4, Cheryl Ann Forster. Cheryl Ann, thanks for popping in at literally the last minute.
You're welcome. And I'm feeling pretty down and out, too. I mean, on the one hand, I'm really excited that the boys are in the playoffs. But on the other hand, well, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of expected it, but you know, maybe not the way it fleshed out. But yeah.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
Yeah. And joining this on the special session, I ask for anyone who wanted to come on, help us commiserate and help us maybe get past this, maybe. he's been on before. He does not have his better half with him, but he is one half of the rockin' duo. You've heard them on Twitter. I'm sure you have. We've posted their videos. John Blackburn of the Captastrophes. John, how you doing this afternoon?
Doing okay, Blue Liner. Sorry to disappoint everybody. You've got the silver medalist with you in the Who Is Your Favorite Captastrophes member contest today. So silver's usually good, but in a race of two people, you know, it is what it is. But yeah, I'm right there with the both of you. I think I posted something last night that, you know, like over under 1.5 shorthanded goals given up in 2.25 games, you know, sounded, I would have taken the under on that and felt pretty good about my money, but things just haven't shaken out, haven't panned out the way we were hoping they would. I had low expectations going in. Some of them were met, some of them we fell short of, but that's playoff hockey.
Yeah, I was honestly going into this. I was kind of hoping for something of the beginning of the other end of the palindrome. Last time the Caps were in the playoffs, I believe it was against Boston, and it was what's called the gentleman's sweep, where the Caps managed to win the first game and lost the next four to Boston. And that was the end of that season. And of course they missed it the year after.
Yeah. And that was Craig Anderson, right? Craig Anderson of all people.
Yes.
Got the win.
Yes. Yes.
Oh yeah. That's right.
41. What's that?
Is that 2022?
I believe it was.
Yeah.
That's when I was in Italy, I think.
Yes. Yes. A 41, we had to rely on a 41-year-old goaltender. You thought the injuries this year were bad. A 41-year-old goaltender gets our only win of the playoffs.
You got to love it when a bald guy in his 40s playing goalie gets you a win. I mean, I can't. As a bald guy in his 40s who's a retired goalie, you know, that made my heart sing that night.
Yeah, it was good to see him. I kind of wish we could maybe have kept him on as a goaltending consultant. He's one of the good guys in the locker room, but you know, he still had some life in him and he wanted to finish out his season. So, but yeah, I mean, that was kind of fun. But this year's team, as I've been saying all year, has been pretty fun to watch. Maybe not so much this playoffs, but for the most part, they've been competitive. Let's just go ahead and rip the Band-Aid off and go over these three games that were kind of low in entertainment. Starting with game one, you kind of suspect we were about how it would start. Caps actually hung with the Rangers in the first period of game one, so not so bad. And then period two came, and yeah, it was all kinds of bad. Rempe, Panarin, and VZ for the Rangers all would score in a span of, 2 minutes and 6 seconds, if I'm reading this right.
About that.
Yeah, 2 minutes and 6 seconds. 4:17 was the first goal, 4:50 the second goal, 6:23 was VZ's goal. And before you could, you know, reach for your whatever beverage you were reaching for, Caps were down 3-0 and playing catch up the rest of the game. Martin Ferravari would manage to get one over a minute later, give us some life. Wilson and Protas on the assist, but it was pretty much too little too late. The Caps were kind of playing catch up, as I said. And I think what happened in this game was that the penalty calling, the pattern of the penalty calling, I'll say, threw off the team. I didn't think they would realize the big stuff would be let go and the ticky-tack stuff would be all called. And it's really hard to get into any kind of sync or rhythm when that happens. So not going to blame the refs completely on this, but I think some of the younger guys kind of weren't quite expecting what was going to be thrown at them. And, and it kind of showed. But all things considered,
you consider there's 46 total penalty minutes in a game. That's hard to set up a rhythm for anybody.
Yeah.
Mention the ones that should have been that weren't, but that's a different discussion.
Well, that all was, I think it's kind of strange when you look at it. This was, looking back at the three games, this one was probably the, if you look at all three games, this one was probably the best officiated. And that's really saying something.
Yeah, and that's considering the first two goals don't happen if the penalties that happened before those goals were called.
Yeah, so. Yeah, for sure. John, how much of this game one did you see?
I was out of town for a work trip, but I caught it. You know, not on my TV at home, but at the TV on a TV in Texas. I remember being struck by how fast the Rangers were in comparison. And I was trying to figure out, you know, is this that the Caps are just this old, or are defensive guys, like, are they just this worn out from the push to even make the playoffs and being down, you know, two of our top four, right? And that's what I was, because it just seemed like, God, all three of these games have moments that blur together for me, but there were moments in both the Philadelphia game at the end of the season and in this first game where TVR trying to skate out of his own zone, the distance between the faceoff dots and the blue lines, he looked like the guy on your JV team that's the last guy on earth you want bringing the puck up the ice to try. I mean, it just, right. I felt exactly. Terrible because I felt terrible because I'm like, he's better than this, but I think they're just that spent because it was the confluence of the two things. They are older guys, especially on the back end. The guys that we lean on heavily, like TVR, like Jensen, like John Carlson, they're older, and there's fewer of them. Right.
And they just, fewer of them.
Yeah. And it just looked like they were skating through quicksand, and it's just like, and then it just like, was this the one, I can't remember if it was game one or game two where Ovi had that egregious turnover at center ice. So I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but just the skating and the first touches just looked bad. And I couldn't tell, I still can't tell if it's the Rangers are good or we're just that old and tired and overmatched.
For me, I think it was probably both sides meeting in the middle and forming, you form the truth out of that. Like you said, our back line has been, Carlson especially, burdened with, carrying the bellwethering of the minutes. I mean, my God, I think Carlson has probably hit for an average this last week's worth of games. If not over 30, then pretty darn close to 30, I would say. I don't know how he's doing it.
I don't either.
I don't know.
I don't either.
But God bless him for doing it, because without him, I think these games would be a lot more of a blowout than they have been. But
I also felt game one was Chuck's worst game of the three, as well. He didn't do anything terrible. And he wasn't getting much help, but I feel he was not, there were moments that I had concern about what he was doing. And I usually don't, I have not had to worry about that with him. And so I felt like game one was Chuck's worst game.
Yeah. I kind of got the sense watching our guys that, I know the job of the head coach is to prepare this team. I'm not going to put this on Spencer Carberry, but I got the sense that the whole team was not quite ready for what the Rangers were going to throw at them. For all we make fun of Laviolette and what he does and has done, this is a pretty good team. They won the President's Trophy for a reason. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, the other half of that equation is, yes, they are that good, but our guys kind of sort of gave off that impression that they weren't quite ready for what was going to get thrown at them. And, a coach with 40 years experience, let alone one in the NHL, is, that's not something they can teach.
Right. It's his first playoffs too. So I'm not willing to give him a pass, but I don't think it. Carberry's still learning, right? Because he's still got stuff he hasn't done yet.
Right. And the other thing I noticed too, especially in games two and three, because of the penalties that are and are not being called, it's almost like our guys are a little gun shy. New York's going out there, they're, hitting left and right and willy-nilly and not getting called for stuff that should get called. And but on the other hand, we know of certain of our guys do the same thing. That's all she wrote. So I think they're playing a little gun shy.
I see that too. So let's quickly jump to game two, which, for my money was the best game of the series all around.
It was a better game for sure.
Yeah. So a quick rundown of the scoring summary. 5:09, Connor McMichael, his first career playoff goal, opened the scoring unassisted. Nice little charge to the net. Leeds in lasting long. They have about the shelf life of an ant under a magnifying glass with this team. Vincent Trocheck, 2.5 minutes later, ex-cap Eric Gustafson on the assist on that one. If it's been one guy who's killed us this series, it's Trocheck. He's either gotten the tying goal or the go-ahead goal or done something that's absolutely killed us. So I think it's a testament to the team that, Panarin hasn't run wild with scoring. Zibanejad, who got the second goal for them, I'm about to say, usually kills us. But I think just one guy here, Trocheck, that, gets that key moment. And that's really all the Caps have allowed. So if you want to see a positive, there's one right there. Now, unfortunately, in this game, the refereeing would actually get worse, and Caps were, he wasn't helping, but as I like to say, they were feeding the Cat a boatload of X-lax because could not stay out of the box, and it hurt them, and lo and behold, 14 minutes into the game, they'd take another penalty, and Zibanejad would score on the power play, give the Rangers back the lead, Trocheck and Lafreniere the assist on that one. But overall, I got a better vibe from the team, so I figured they were capable of a comeback, and they did. 4-14, Caps would get their own power play. Dylan Strome, his first, Wilson and Pacioretty on the assist on that one, 4-14. Mm-hmm. And then Roslovic, stop me if you heard this before, Rangers power play at 12:26. Yeah. Gustafson and Lafreniere the assists. And then here comes the backbreaker. John, this was the play you were mentioning earlier. This is where Caps had a power play, and Ovi was kind of, I don't know what he was trying to do, but he was on the near side boards, the left side boards, and he had the puck about around the point of the blue line. I'm not sure if he was sure what to do with it, just throw it to center or skate out with it. Either way, it didn't look like he had his mind made up, and it got stolen by, I believe, Chris Kreider, who got one of the assists. Either him or Zibanejad, because they got the assists. And from there, it was tic-tac-toe.
Yeah.
I think it was Kreider, Zibanejad, Miller.
Yeah. So, Keandre Miller, as he is wont to do, and I've been wanting this guy in a Caps jersey forever. Not going to light up the scoreboard, but if you leave him with enough time, he'll bury it. And he did.
Yep.
And this, you never, ever, ever want to give up a shorthanded goal or a goal in the last or first minute of play in a period. Well, Caps did one of those here, and I think that could have killed them, but they displayed a lot of fight in the third period. So, you know, love seeing that. Caps ended up with another power play in the third, 11:45. Wilson would get his first, LaPierre and Carlson on the assist. So they showed a lot of fight. I really thought they came pretty damn close to tying it when they went 6-on-5 for the last 2 minutes.
Yeah, if that's a 62-minute game, it's probably tied.
Yeah,
I mean, they were...
Exactly.
They were right there.
Yeah, I thought they showed a lot of grit, a lot of fight, and I was as bad as I could have felt for my team going down 2-0, I felt really good about at least their compete level. So it kind of felt like sort of a win, even though it wasn't, but... compared to how they came out so flat the first game, you know, this was much, much better. And the narrative has been, look, if they can be better on the power play and shorthanded, well, they were 2 out of 5, but 1 shorthanded goal. So overall a +1 in that regard, pardon me.
Well, and you're coming home, you're down 0-2, but you've played a better game. Your power play has broken through. You lose by 1. You don't, you know, not that 4-1 is getting blown out, but you lose by a single score, right? And there's the old adage that, you know, a playoff series really doesn't start until, a home team loses a game, right?
Yes.
So if we just hold serve, we're now in a best of, you know, if we hold serve on home ice, we're now in a best of 3. Right. And so like I had optimism, you know, I was coming home from my work trip. I was going to be home on my own couch with Laura for game 3. So I was feeling good after game 2, as good as you can feel, you know, coming off another loss. But like you said, the shorthanded goal was really I wasn't overly concerned. Because I didn't think it would become a trend like it has. I was as optimistic as I could be about these guys I felt like they got up off the mat finally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, sure. I was hoping, especially after the Panarin hit on Osh that it would carry over and yeah. that the home crowd would be like, okay, guys, we really need to put it to them. You know, forget about, don't worry about the penalties and whatever. Those are the penalties I'll take all day long because you're fighting for your guys, right?
Right.
Very you're fighting true. For your team. You're fighting for the win. I'll take those penalties all day long. But y'all need to get out there and not be afraid to do this. And I didn't see it last night. I mean, yeah. I saw parts of the game. I didn't see the whole game, but I was at a friend's house. But she happened to have the game on, so I would like kind of peek in and watch for a few minutes and then go back over to.
Last night was frustrating because they scored first again. And I don't mean to cut you off, Blue Liner, but they score first again. And it's almost like these guys think that when they get a lead, like the job is done.
Right.
Like that's the set, like, because okay. So it took me till April to get sick of it. I'm tired of this act.
Well, yeah.
I'd like to watch a different movie now, please. But it's home ice, we've got the lead, and they go to take a deep breath and the puck's behind Chuck again. And it's just like, come on, guys. So,
yeah. And it was extremely deflating. So, yeah, I mean, like Cheryl said, I wanted to see some energy. I wanted to see some fight. I want to see that carry over, that energy they had, that, you know, will to win in those last 2 to 5 minutes of the last game. I wanted to see that carry over. And they just came out so flat. And honestly, I was very surprised when Carlson got that goal to start. If the phrase fluke goal could be in any dictionary, you'd probably get a video of how this thing went in. And that would be the illustration. Because
Joe B called it a muffin. I'm like, it's a pizza, it's a bagel, it's a something. It's some sort of baked good. But that thing was light and airy and fluttery and somehow went in.
There you go.
And went straight over. Let's throw in a waffle in there because it went over the waffle glove into the basket. So Johnny B. Good was good at serving up the waffle and staked them to the lead. And this one lasted all of about 34 seconds of playing time.
Yep.
I wish I was kidding about that. I'm not kidding about that.
We know. I know. I know you're not.
I'm sitting here looking at. Yeah, no.
It's. I don't understand how they can find themselves, you know, in a position where, okay, well, this is what we set out to do. Let's just keep doing it, and it would be the simple play. And I don't know. It was like literally the next shift. They decided to stop playing for long enough, the length of that shift, and game tied. Kreider with his second, Zibanejad, Roslovic on the assist on that one. And then 2 minutes later, here's that the over under with the shorthanded goals in the series by one team.
Unreal.
And here's the second one in two games. Barclay Goodrow, Vincent Trocheck, stop me if you haven't heard that name before, and Trouba.
Right.
And I mean, this one was a turnover at center ice, and all series the Caps have had trouble on the power play, just getting it out of their zone and into the Rangers zone. But this was extremely bad. I can't even remember who it was. I'll see if I can call up the replay real quick and see. Okay, so the replay starts with the Caps having it in their zone, and in the Rangers zone, they're not very strong on the puck moving it in the zone. It's just, you know, another one of your John's light, airy, muffin-like, you know, pastry-like deals where they were, okay, so Ovechkin flung a shot at the net, and then nobody goes after the puck and manages to bounce onto the stick of the Rangers, and then Trocheck, I think, was the one who carried it out, and then Goodrow got all the way behind the defense, and that was all she wrote. This was the winning goal. And there's a reason you don't want to give up a shorthanded goal, because it's more deflating than a pinprick to a balloon.
And the Caps actually took a hooking penalty on this that would have negated the power play. But because, and was this the one that was delayed? But because they scored on a delayed penalty, we were just still right on the power play? Or am I thinking of a different goal?
I think that might have been it.
Because that happened also.
I'm pretty sure the replay I just saw, the ref's arm was up. So I think that was this.
Right. We actually would have lost the power play
had they gotten it back, and play would have stopped, it would have resulted on a temporary 4-on-4, which probably would have been better in the long term. But
Maybe makes it slightly less difficult to get it out of your own zone because the ice is less crowded. But, it's just not.
And then second period, a big surprise. Rangers get another power play. Trocheck again. Zibanejad and Fox on the assist at 15:22, and that would do it for the scoring. Caps just could not muster anything offensively. Even though if I'm looking at this right, their highest shot output in all three games. If I'm looking at this right, 29, they managed to get 29 shots on goal in this game.
Yeah. But what's the breakdown? How many of those came in the third period? Because I feel like the Rangers, especially last night, just went into more like lockdown mode than I remember seeing them go into in the previous games that they had lead. So I feel like if they had 30 or 29 or 30, I feel like well over a third of those came in the third period last night, but I could be wrong.
No, you are very right. So 29 was their total. They got 14 in the third alone.
Yeah. And they were all, it was just the Rangers were content to sit back with a 2-goal lead. I also think the Rangers didn't want things to get out of control and have, Wilson or,
McElrath
or anybody, or somebody start going after people. So I think the Rangers took their foot off the gas a little bit in the third period last night.
Yeah. And, to their credit, why should they engage? Because you give the momentum back. Right. So, there is that, but it's, As much as you want to say, there's a mismatch here. This was a game for the taking. It was theirs for the taking, and they could have done, I think, a lot better managing the puck. Certainly the shorthand goal is killer, that you don't want to do that, but this was a golden opportunity for them. They had the momentum, and they came out flat, and
7 power plays, right? Like we had way more power plays than they did.
Six power plays.
Okay, but it was 6-3 or 6-4 as far as power plays?
Right. They definitely had, for all the complaining that has been done about the officiating, let's be honest here, you get 6 power plays in a game, you have got to convert on at least 1 or 2 of them.
Yep.
Yeah.
You have to. And had they would have been in this game, but...
Yep.
Pardon me. But they didn't, and it's just, again, they were not very firm on the movements. Everything was just soft. They were, I don't want to say they were out of sync, but they were just, at times something was missing. Yeah. At times they were trying to crowd the net, which, you want to do against a Shesterkin, but it just, even when they got it in front of the net, that was the other thing.
Maybe the word you're looking for.
Yeah, that definitely. But that was the other part of the equation. It when they did successfully get their high danger chance, Shesterkin was there just about every time. But again, the downside to that was, look at where they were shooting. They were all shooting low. None of the shots were probably above his ankles.
The Carlson one was the only one that was.
Carlson was the only one
right.
that got past him, and look where that sucker went.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Locker and Joe B were both saying, hey, look, may want to start lifting it, elevating it.
No, you know, Patches, the one time he elected to shoot, Patches put it right. It was a great save, put it right in, but it was right at pad level. LaPierre on that turnaround shot opportunity that he had, I get it. He's, you know, trying to get that off his stick as quickly as possible. But that was not terribly elevated. I think he had more time than he thought he did. And if he takes a fraction of a second more, maybe he can put a little more torque on that and get it up. But they were all, you know, nothing was going, you know, bar down. They were all middle of the net down.
Yeah. And I think in their zeal to, you know, finish or try to finish whatever chances they were getting, you know, and that, unfortunately that comes with being, you know, slightly in panic mode or, you know, just kind of this malaise, if you will, of you know, whatever they're feeling. They weren't feeling like the game was going their way. So the desperation level goes up and it leads you to do things instead of, you know, like I said, John, taking your time, taking advantage of the space and time that you do have. I think that played into it a little bit. So, okay. So that's, here we are. I mean, 3-0 down. I think a lot of folks had the Caps in this scenario. I don't think too many had them putting up as much of a fight as they have, at least for a good portion of this series. But, you know, again, here we are. I would love to sit here and say they're going to do a repeat of the 42 Maple Leafs and come back 4-0, but I'm gonna be a realist here and say that's probably not gonna happen. I probably wouldn't even bet a nickel I picked up off the street on it. At this point, all I want to see in Game 4 is they're just coming out and playing like literally like they've got nothing to lose.
Exactly, because they have nothing to lose.
They right,
yeah. It's going to be tough. I mean, at this point, even if Jensen and Sandin are ready to go, do you bring them back? Like if they could go, is it even worth it to put them out there to try and, you know, lose the series 4-1 instead of getting swept? Like, I don't know. Who do you put in if not?
Because Iorio's out, TBR's out.
Well, that's the thing that I don't know. Like if we're down those three, I don't even know who the sixth is.
Well,
that's so, right. That's the other thing.
We almost have to put them in. That's the problem.
Yeah.
So after Iorio went down, I believe they called up. I'm pretty sure it was, Lucas Hardy Hum and Octel was who they called up. So by default,
have anybody else.
He's now the sixth defenseman, and the research I did was that, of course, you can only call up a player from the minor leagues that is under a Washington Capitals contract.
Right. There's only one other guy.
One, right. There's one left in Hershey right now, and that's Chase Prisky.
I saw that online, that he is literally the only other person left.
Yeah. So... they would have to call him up as the seventh defenseman, you know, for assuming there's even a game 5 at this point. And that's a stretch, but you know, it's got to be next man up. If I'm proud of anything of this team, it's been that. But I mean, wow, what a way to go, you know. Let's address the elephant in the room. We could sit here and make a lot over the injuries. But the fact is, injuries are to be expected in an ultra contact sport like hockey. So,
absolutely.
You know, there was one year where, you know, Ted Leonsis' second or third year as an owner. And he finally realized this and decided his famous statement was, I want to get more bulletproof for the playoffs. And unfortunately, the Caps were way less than that to begin with, especially on the back line.
Yeah.
Now, did we see any of this coming? I didn't. But
No.
It is what it is. It's not, you hate to leave it like that, but you got to deal with it and you got to weather it and hope maybe, you know, it breaks your way. But, you know, I'm going to leave it up to you guys. I mean, you can, if you're feeling like you're needing to vent about it, but, you know, for me, let the New York fans, you know, mouth off about, you know, whatever, and let themselves look like idiots. Is my take on this, because a lot of them have been just absolutely completely stupid about what's going on in this series, in my opinion. So for me, I'm not going to add to any of that except what I see as what happened. And for my money, the hit on Van Riemsdyk, yes, it is suspension worthy. It was a target to the head. Maybe or maybe not, he leaves his feet, but he did target the head. That is against the rule, and he was penalized for it. And I think personally, it's worth some supplemental discipline. Will it be? Probably not. That's where I'm going to leave that part of it. But if you want to talk, want to talk about that.
I'm 100% with you, Gil. It's at this point, I vented everything I needed to vent during the games, after the games, and got it all out of my system. And at this point, yeah, we all know that the DOPS is, shall we say, inconsistent.
That's in putting their it rules kindly.
And enforcement. Yes. So at this point, it shouldn't surprise me that this is not going to get looked at, as the hit to Iorio didn't get looked at, or not very closely anyway, as the hit to Oshie didn't get looked at very closely. I mean, when you have your concussion spotter come out on the ice, even though he was able to come back into the game, that deserves a second look, in my opinion. I missed the hit to TVR, but I mean, he's out for the rest of the season. Iorio's out for the rest of the season. We got lucky TJ came back. But, I mean, DLPS, you know, for all they say they want to eliminate this stuff, they're not doing a whole lot about it. At this point, it shouldn't matter if there's a penalty assessed or not. If a guy is injured, they need to take a look at that hit, you know, to see.
Well, that's what I thought. Go ahead, Cher. Sorry.
No, go ahead. You're fine. Well, I
didn't know if you were wrapping up or not. For what it's worth, I'm having a hard time remembering the Iorio hit, but I'll focus on the two that I do remember clearly. I thought they called a 5-minute major in game when Panarin hit Oshie, and then very, very quickly they got on the headset and decided it was not a penalty at all.
Yes, you're right. I stand corrected there. You're right.
So I don't. Yeah, but they didn't. I understand what you were saying. You were like I think a lot of people were expecting, like, okay, they're going to look at this tomorrow. And they looked at it like right then and there and decide and overturned their 5-minute major. I don't think that Panarin's hit on Oshie is a penalty. I really don't. It's that reverse hit that we've seen TJ do a bunch of times. I think he actually did it to, and I can't remember who. I was trying to remember this before we were going to do this today. He did that in 2017 or 2018 to a Penguin. It might have been Letang, and actually stood him up, and Letang was a little bit woozy. I feel like I'm hypersensitive to it because it's our guys, right? And I know Oshie's history, just like every Caps fan knows Oshie's history, and we don't like seeing that because we joke right. about him being fragile and needing to wrap him in bubble wrap for, you know, so he can play with his kids in the backyard so he doesn't get injured. Right. I don't happen to think that hit, and it has nothing to do with reputation. I just don't see a penalty there from Panarin. The Rempe one is different. To me, the head, whether he intended it or not, the head is the primary point of contact. It's the initial point of contact and the primary point of contact. And I don't feel like I'm penalizing Rempe for being 6'7", because I don't believe you should do that either, right? He's a huge guy that doesn't give him carte blanche, but it also doesn't mean that I don't think he should get more scrutiny or more penalties just because he's a huge human being. I don't think Rempe leaves his feet. His blades come off the ice. This is the thing that drives me nuts and why I try. I'm with you, Gil, where it's like, I don't really want to engage on this. You got one side screaming, his feet come off the ice. Well, like, he's like, that's physics, man. Like, he's skating and he's traveling horizontally and he runs into something that throws off his balance and his center of gravity. And like, I defy anybody to throw a hit and not have their blade, like not have the film stopped where both their blades are off the ice at some point in time. That's just how physics work. I don't know that they will do anything, but I think they should look at the Rempe hit. I think reputation should play into that because this is now four people he's injured in like 30 games. And we have a guy on our team that has had a history and had to modify how he plays, and he still lives, you know, kind of right on the edge at times. So that's where I line up on it. I started down the rabbit hole of arguing with people online this morning and regretted every moment of it because people don't know the difference between a fact and an opinion. And, you know, it's one thing if you want to debate hockey, but I can't help you if you don't know what words mean.
Wasn't Rempe the same guy that hit Malenstein in the face a couple games ago too, and they didn't call it?
He is, and I didn't think that was a penalty either.
That one to me at best was questionable. I think that was more a case of Malenstein just kind of running into him, and Rempe just happened to have his arm extended. If on that one, if Rempe is guilty of anything, it's setting a pick. So maybe, if you want to be really ticky tack, maybe interference. But other than that, and of course, you don't want to see Malenstein get hurt.
I wasn't saying like a roughing or anything like that. But
Well, the infuriating part of that is if Carlson doesn't touch the puck, I don't think it goes in.
Well, there is that.
Anyway, so I didn't mean to take us down the too far.
But I kind of figured there'd be that element. So best to get that out. But you know, thank God there's three of us.
I've resigned myself. The refs are going to call what they call, and they're not going to call what they're not going to call.
Right.
And it's not worth stroking out over.
True.
Yeah.
Very true.
Just deal with it and move on.
And thank God.
And the thing that a lot of people fail to see, this has been across the league. This has not just been the Capitals that it's been so bad. It has been across the league. I was watching a couple other games, and the officiating was just as bad. So, you know, as much as we want to say the refs are deciding the game, blah, blah, blah. It's across the league, people. It's not just us.
I think the league definitely needs to sit down and totally overhaul or reevaluate what they have because it's gotten that bad where it's every game.
And I don't know what precipitated it, but I don't know if it was in the Winnipeg game last night. Brendan Dillon got injured in a meaningless scrum. And I think he probably got stepped on by a skate, you know, went down on the ice, but I don't know if that got out of control because, you know, Winnipeg got embarrassed and they, you know, got their feelings hurt and decided to do something about it at the end of the game, or if the refs let it get out of control and that led to stuff boiling over. So that's the danger, right? If the players don't know, and this goes back to how we started in the beginning with game one, where it's like, you know, the players not really knowing what's going to be called and what isn't, the big stuff gets let go. And the little stuff, the ticky tack stuff, like Wilson's, I don't know what the heck they called, like tossing into the back of the net that they called on him last night or whatever. Like when you don't know what's going to happen, the players don't have a rhythm and it's really easy for things to get out of control and emotions to sort of boil over. So
I hope
Dylan's okay. So
me
too. Yeah. I was here.
That looked pretty bad. But I think I think the league needs to sit down with its officiating crew and say, look, you know, the players are saying they want consistency, figure out what you're going to call, communicate better, and just be better overall. But you know, there's never
the people in Toronto.
Well, yeah, well, but you know, and that they're part of it, but there's no transparency, zero. So we don't know. We're never going to know if there's ever even going to be that conversation. And that's probably the most frustrating element to all of this.
Yep. All I want in life is food, shelter, and a clear definition of what goalie interference is.
Yes.
Oh, for sure. But thank God the three of us are among, and that's what we've all been trying to do here in this group, is in this podcast, is to, you know, get together and have, you know, a civil discourse about the game we love, and find the good, find a rational solution, or, you know, figure out what it is that we saw. It's try to see both sides, and
yep,
you know, but unfortunately, I want to put this out there really fast, but not to be a Debbie Downer, as Anna would say, but I saw a video on Twitter. I think, John, you might have seen this too, where there were a couple of Rangers fans in Cap 1 that were involved in a scrum. I don't know who started what.
I heard about that.
Yeah, I don't know who started what. The video doesn't go anywhere, but they were having their jerseys tugged, and I think all they were trying to do was just leave their seats because it was close to the end of the game or something. And at the end of the video, I think the person taking the video, you can hear them say, 9/11.
Right.
Which,
whoa,
oh my God, that how tasteless, how awful can you be? How awful a human being do you got to be?
That's assuming coming from our fan base, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, a couple of things about that.
Right.
One, there's been some Carolina fan that's been posting,
I saw that
stuff
too,
about that, and then someone in the comments said, it's not like Washington, D.C. wasn't, not that it would make it okay or not okay if we were or weren't, but like, it's not like Washington DC wasn't involved in that as well.
Right.
But I just, like, I don't understand. I was looking, and this is why I actually had to put the phone down last night, and just stop participating for a while. There's some Dallas Stars fan or Colorado fan that got beat up by
It was a Vegas yeah, Golden Knights fan.
Oh, there it is. There you go. Okay.
Who got sucker punched by a Dallas fan.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was either last year or the year before that there was that Tampa Bay Lightning guy that got mm-hmm. put in the hospital by the Rangers fan, who's now been banned from MSG for life. So every fan base has
about,
them.
Yeah, I was going to say, I just saw something about Florida fans that were kicked out of the Tampa, or the other way around, because they were wearing the wrong jersey or something.
Yeah.
Well, I know Tampa. Well, here's the thing. Tampa, in their 100 section, I don't know if they've changed it, but they used to not allow anyone not wearing Tampa gear in that section. You either had to wear neutral or Tampa gear. You could not wear the other team's gear in that 100 level.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember. And there was a Mother's Day game. And it was actually, the only reason I remember this is because Clinton Yates retweeted my tweet. And he's like, that's sick. This is actually a brilliant idea. I wanted to go to the game on Mother's Day and have a red shirt that says, I love my mom, when the Caps were playing the Lightning. Specifically, ooh, like they're either going to, I either get to stay and wear my red that says I love my mom, or I get kicked out and neutral. I get to tell everybody that Tampa Bay hates your mom.
Yeah.
Like the Tampa Bay Lightning hate your mom.
I think that is one of the most ridiculous rules in there. I think that is just ridiculous.
Okay. But
if
our owner
fans, you welcome all fans.
But our owner does that too. And he got, you know, raked over the coals a bit a few years ago when he was restricting what zip codes for credit cards could buy tickets to keep Yinzers out of our stadium. So, you know, I don't
remember that, but okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Uncle Ted wouldn't accept credit card purchases from some certain radius within, you know, whatever whatever ground zero for 412 area code was or whatever. So
yeah, I actually remember that. And that was one of the first, that was one of the first 2 or 3 years, when he bought, after he bought the team. He wasn't afraid to try some really out there stuff.
Yeah. And I don't know that he was the first one to do it. And again, all the teams front offices participate from what I can see, and the same amount of and the same amount of hijinks and social media shenanigans and all, you know, they're all doing the same thing. It's not like, I don't think Ted was the first. He might have been the first, but he definitely isn't the only one at this point.
No, I know they all do it. I know, it's just crazy.
He was the first to implement an online or technical solution where the reader could tell what zip code or whatever region that the credit card, the payment was coming from. So that was his advantage over.
Okay. Yeah, well, he is a tech guy, so
he is. He is.
Yeah.
I mean.
So.
Yeah.
That was kind of funny. You know, we're talking about,
I mean, and I know on some level, all sports have some sort of rule, whatever, that tries to get as many of the. Well, I think part of the reason you try to implement that, because there are certain places, New York, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, it's actually cheaper for them to come here than it is for them to go to their own arenas to play.
Sure.
So it makes sense to have something like that kind of in place. But on the other hand, you know, if someone wants to see a hockey game, they should be able to see the hockey game.
Right. And they should be able to go to a hockey game. And assuming that the fan that was trying to leave in the Rangers jersey last night didn't do anything, like, leave the guy alone. Like, that's kind of I think what Blue Liner's original point to this part of the conversation was, which is, we need to, like, Blue Liner's working and you're working hard
for our teams, and we may not like their team, but you know, unless they're being a real jerk, and that doesn't give us free reign to be a jerk back, but at least, you know, you got to treat each other with respect. You know, you just have to. At the end of the day.
I agree.
So when it comes to the incident I mentioned, I think this tweet from Travis Tuthill kind of sums it up perfectly. And I quote, "Fighting other fans and chanting 9/11 over a fucking sports game is truly disgusting behavior. Whoever these Caps, air quotes, fans are, should be banned from the arena. The fuck is wrong with you? I could not agree more. Shame the fuck out of you, whoever you people were." Not that you're listening to this, but if you are, shame the F out of you for this behavior. That is not who we are. Okay. So yeah, I hope they are identified, pointed out, and never allowed into COA ever again. Because that's right.
We all get frustrated with this team. We do. We all get frustrated with the refs, with the team, with the other team, with whatever. But, you know, at the end of the day, does it matter tomorrow? Does it matter, you know, by the time you get home, is it really going to matter that this call was missed? No, because there's another game, you know, there may not be another game. But you know what I mean? At the end of the day, it's not your life in peril because this call wasn't made, you know, or it's not the end of the world that this call was made or not made. So yes, get frustrated, you know, get annoyed, whatever, and then let it go.
True. Very true.
But don't take it out. Don't take it out on somebody that has nothing to do with it.
Right.
You know, these guys are here just watching their hockey team play.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Okay. We got a little bit of time left. okay. So I don't know what's going to happen. Game 4. As I said, I hope they really come out and just leave it all on the ice, play like they got nothing to lose. Cause they don't.
Me too, because it looks like I'm actually going.
I'm going to be watching regardless. And, no, well, knowing
I wasn't originally.
Well, knowing my luck, this thing will go into double overtime because the next day is Monday.
And we all have to go to work.
And we all have to go to work.
Okay. They decided to play the game at 8 o'clock at night.
Right. Like, why? Because it's the NFL. I originally was not going to be going to the game tomorrow because I have a day-long retreat that gets over at 4:30, and it was just going to make a really long day for me. But the person, my friend, was going to go with bailed, so now I'm going.
Well, I hope to see lots of pictures and video and everything there.
So I'm going to get my little crystal bag together like I had when we were watching the Tampa game and all my I'm gonna have it all.
Please
ready
do.
To go.
All the juju. Yeah, we're
all the good juju, yeah.
It's gonna
absolutely
be needed.
And I figured out that was the problem. I didn't have my bag together for the first three games. So I'm now gonna have to pack it all together for the next four.
Thank
now,
God you figured
thing.
It out.
See, here's the thing, though. This is what I'd love to see. I doubt it probably won't happen, but I would love to see it. Remember, what was it, 2016, 17, something like that, when we were up 3-0 on the Rangers and they came back and won the last four in a row? I'd like to turn that around and do that to them this year.
Oh, that
don't think it'll
nice,
happen.
Like I say, I
think it'll happen. With this team, I don't think it'll happen.
I wouldn't bet any amount of money on it.
No, absolutely not. But
it would be hilarious if they won this
win tomorrow night.
The next I'd love to see a win, and it'd be hilarious if they came back and won game five also and put a little bit of a scare into them.
Yeah,
that would be more than good enough for me. But really quick, while we're wrapping up, one eye on the future here. I know we wanted to extend, but we got to look at the future. What is really quick? So, from the both of you, what is probably the one thing the Caps need to address in the coming offseason?
Goalie coach.
John, how about you?
Oh, man. Narrow it down to one thing. I will say this. I think that they added Strom and Milano and Protas and LaPierre and McMichael and Sandin. And they dropped in average age of player something like 0.6 or 0.8 years, even with all those guys. So I think they still just need to get massively younger.
Well, my answer to that would be, unfortunately, Oshie, Carlson, and Ovi, probably just the three of them alone, probably still push that up into the mid-30s. But, I would be in full agreement with that. But fortunately, as has been said before, they are on an extended plan, and win or lose these next few games, however the series shakes out, I am still proud of this team because they exceeded expectations and they are following that trajectory to a T. So this is going to sound weird, but I can't wait for next year and see how, what they're going to do and how much more they can improve because they can, obviously. So.
Well, take that a little bit further, right? Like they weren't supposed to make the playoffs this year. You now have all these guys. You got Chuck, you got Mikey, you got Lappy. All these guys are getting their first taste of playoff hockey, right? You got Johansson, who wasn't even supposed to be playing, right? Like all these guys, all these guys won't have to go through all of the first time jitters and nervousness and everything. It's all taken care of this year, like unexpectedly, but wonderfully unexpectedly.
Now take it a step further. We get out of this series. Loppy, Miro, which kind of said, did Miro play last night? Did I see him?
Yes, he did.
Last
night?
He did.
Okay, good. So Loppy, Miro, McElrath, those guys are all going to go back to Hershey for the Calder Cup. Now imagine they take all this experience they've got now, even though it's only a few games, and take that back to Hershey in the AHL. Can you imagine what Hershey's going to look like in the Calder Cup with these guys now that they've gotten these guys who've been playing most of the season in the big leagues
Yep.
back down there?
Yeah. And they'll just get more experience there too.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to watch.
I will be going to Hershey games for sure.
Marcus is trying to talk me into going to one of them. And,
you've got to come with us. You have to.
I was there when they had the cup. So the Giant Arena, pretty cool place to watch a hockey.
Yeah, Laura and I went up last year. I forget which we went in the second round. It was awesome.
We were at game five against the Amherst, and we were at game five against Coachella Valley.
Oh, wow.
Phenomenal.
That's awesome.
It was great. Yeah, awesome. And then we were there opening night, home opener this year. We were there for the banner raising.
Nice. That's awesome.
All right. I think this is a good place to wrap it up. So, John, Cheryl, thank you both for coming on and kind of helping me out here last minute with this. And hopefully you on the other side of the earbuds, the speakers, what have you, wherever you were listening to this, maybe feel a little bit better because, like we all said, this was kind of a bonus and it doesn't look great right now, but it really will get better from here. And they'll continue to be that entertaining team that we've grown to love. So, this will pass. This will what we're feeling now, it won't be forever, no matter what happens, Sunday night. So no reason to feel bad, at least not for too long. So
not at all.
All right. So for C4, Cheryl Ann Forster, and one half of that rockin' Caps duo, the Captastrophes, Mr. John Blackburn.
Yes, sir. I just said yes, sir. I was excited because you were plugging us. I was just saying, yeah. All
yes,
right.
Yes, yes.
I heard the guitar in the background and I thought you were warming up for a song. Like, oh yeah.
Ooh.
I could try. It's not gonna be as good without Stand the playoffs, cup raised up, whiskey in our glass. Here's to showing up, to showing out. Guys, escape real fast. We were shot score winning, something living, thinking about that final horn sounding. Sure would like to stay in the Stanley playoffs. There we go.
Yep.
Much better with Mrs. Cap.
If I had any kind of awareness, I would have said C sharp D flat for the key. But
there's an F sharp in there somewhere. I don't know.
that's the extent of my musical knowledge. But yeah. Thank you so much, John. You are awesome. Got to have both you and Laura again on sometime. And of course, thank you, C4. So we're going to wrap it up here. Eye on this team, guys. Don't despair. Keep cheering. They're still our Caps at the end of the day. So keep the faith. That's all we ask. So for Mr. John Blackburn and Cheryl Ann Forster, this is the Blue Liner on Point signing off and reminding you. That I hate to espouse a certain theory, but we all have to realize that this planet we live on has a lot of water on it. And you notice that none of it is carbonated. So, of course, you know what that means? That means the Earth is flat.
Oh,
hallelujah. And let's go, Caps.
Go, Caps.
Woo!
This has been another episode of the Power Play Point Podcast. All episodes are available from Apple Podcasts, the Podbean app, blueliner77.podbean.com, and now available from Stitcher. Music by Joe McAllister, voiceover by Jeffrey Conkle.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Power Play Point Podcast. Thanks for listening.
I all of a sudden forgot how to play guitar after 20-something years. Put me on the spot. I put myself on the spot and I freaked out.